Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
California Girls, They're Unforgettable is VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Scullion, and Jade King. This week, finally, I am back. We've got Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and WWE 2K24. But first, how are we doing, folks? Jade, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Nursing what I think is a flu, but I'm staying alive, ready for more video games. I will refuse to play Suicide Squad until it's way cheaper, because I'm
fair. We'll talk about that as the podcast goes on. Chris, what ails you this week?
Everything, mate. I'm shattered. I'm
life.
For people watching the video version of the podcast, I'm currently in my bedroom because my games room is out of action. The living room's out of action.
His wife's kicked him out of the game.
I know, but that's why I'm holding the microphone in front of my face like a football pundit, because I don't have anything like here. It's just my kitchen is being in the process of being completely redone. So if you walk in there now, it's just like destruction all over the place. If you stand in my kitchen and look out the window, all you can see is like a wire fence and the skeleton of Sarah Connor grabbing onto it. That's all it's like.
There's nowhere in my house to talk about video games.
I'm stuck in a bedroom like a troll. Trolls famously live in bedrooms. Yeah, but yeah, so it's not been the least stressful week, but and still alive.
Still alive, still kicking for now. Just to play into this, Chris, what do you think of Brendan Rodgers' options at centre back for the remainder of the season?
Limited at best.
Limited.
To be fair, there's still 7 hours to go in the transfer window at the time of recording this. So I'm sure I'm sure once people hear this podcast, which was recorded the day before it goes out, we'll look silly at the 12 defenders we bring in at the last minute.
We certainly will. Speaking of, point of order, it's currently Wednesday evening at around 5:15. Therefore, there will be no State of Play chat on this show, because it hasn't happened yet. Later tonight, the State of Play is going to happen. We assume that it's going to be Rise of the Ronin, it's going to be Death Stranding 2, it's going to be all that kind of stuff. Just kind of tangentially on the state of State of Play, Jade, do you think it's weird that they have this distinction between a PlayStation Showcase and a State of Play, where the PlayStation Showcase is like, we're going to show you the proper games here, State of Play is like a marketing exercise?
I do kind of feel bad for the games they put on there, because they almost preface it. It's like, oh, this one's going to be a bit shitter compared to the big one. So people are like, oh, what games are on here? But it's just a case of like Xbox and Sony are still trying to copy what Nintendo Direct does, and they're still not really sure what that is. Yeah. But they said this one's like, what, 40 minutes? But is it first party, or is it just like a mix?
I think it's a mixture, yeah. Okay. Because Sony's first party is a bit bloody weak this year anyway, so what would they have to put on a proper one?
Nothing. They haven't shown us anything, have they?
It concerns me because the rumours are like it'll be like 15 games. I don't know if that's confirmed or just rumoured at this point. But if that's the case and there's 40 minutes, like that's going to be a lot of work.
38 minutes of Death Stranding 2.
Exactly. So they'll jam in the other 14 in a 2-minute like montage, and it'll just be a nightmare, right?
Look how silly we'll look when people are listening to this and saying it was the greatest ever. They announced the hottest and brightest. They announced
Vib
the
Ribbon
Last
2,
of Us
Part 4. Oh,
don't you fucking talk about Vib Ribbon in this podcast.
Vib Ribbon is heroic. What a
God
game.
God rest them. Speaking of God rest it, a new Deus Ex game has been reportedly cancelled amid layoffs at Eidos Montreal, the worst period for game developers in my kind of living memory continues. According to Bloomberg, over 100 developers were laid off. This was also confirmed by Eidos Montreal. A Deus Ex reboot that they were in the process of making has been cancelled. No prizes for guessing who was holding the sword to chop these developers up. It was your enemies and mine at the Embracer Group. Chris, How many times can I throw to you on this podcast and say, can you believe what's happening here?
I think I could take another 6 or 7, and then after that, I'll just be done.
Yeah.
It's just not. I mean, the Deus Ex isn't really a series I've been that interested in. So, but this, it, when things like this happen, it's really shit to just say, well, it's not a game I care about. So therefore, but so like loads more people are losing their jobs again. Yeah. It's like, when is this going to stop? But like, you get the feeling now that everyone's jumping on the bandwagon now, because like, well, let's all do our layoffs now, because if we're part of a big enormous sea of layoffs, maybe we won't look as bad. But everyone's coming out of this really badly, and it's just grim. It shows a remarkable lack of a remarkable short-sightedness that clearly a lot of money was invested during COVID, when game like sales and game kind of use rocketed up, clearly because nobody had left or was leaving their house. And then when COVID ended, all the numbers are going back down again, and this is a consequence, as lots of people are losing their jobs, and it's just grim. It's just, I don't know. It's going to get worse before it gets better, because like, as we record this, it's the end of January, and as we did a story last week basically saying already in January alone we're past halfway, half the total number of layoffs in 2023 as a whole, so 2024 is going to be worse basically.
Yeah, it seems like a really bad kind of reflex from, as you say, how staffed up things got during the pandemic, how much money was flowing during the pandemic. Jade, what is the solution here? I mean, obviously the solution that we would want is executives and C-suite people accept less money, but when that doesn't happen, like, how do we stop this kind of mass exodus from the games industry? Because there's been a lot of conversation about how now, if you've just lost your job in the games industry and you have 10 years experience, there's like no jobs going. So if you're a graduate, like, what are you supposed to do now?
I don't know, like, my niece is studying game design at the moment, and something they talk to me all the time about is, oh my God, like, what market am I walking into? Is there even a hope for the future of this industry in regards to, like, what will I be working on? Will I just be competing with too much competition? And I think one of the big things with the layoffs we've seen in January, people have said, oh, the COVID bubble's bursting finally. But while I think that plays a part in it, it feels like so much bigger than that. Like, we're seeing all of these acquisitions that happened in the past few years really come to bite, like Embracer and so on, in the arse, to the point where I feel like when like all of these properties were acquired, we were like, finally, we're going to get a new Deus Ex, or we're going to get a better Tomb Raider and so on. And it's becoming abundantly clear that if it doesn't suit their bottom line, then they really don't care. And I don't know, that scares me for the future of the games industry and how much talent is either being pushed away from video games or simply doesn't have a place where they can belong anymore. And considering that games are making more money than ever and they're more ambitious than ever, it kind of sucks to see the job market be as fraught as it is. And at least right now, it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better.
Yeah, it's tangential, but like when younger writers and stuff like that, or people in uni ask me now, they're like, what's your advice to become a games journalist? Like, don't.
Yeah, like,
go for something.
I was
else.
Saying that at the time.
Well, yeah, but it's like you can write about games freelance and stuff like that. I hate to give him credit, but Sam White has consistently great advice about this. Like, he has written for GQ and all these massive places, and he's not done it full time ever, as far as I'm aware. He's always done it as an aside to something else. But yeah, it's a horrible situation. Not to put that to one side, but obviously the kind of the newsworthy point from the Deus Ex perspective, those Deus Ex reboots on the 360, I enjoyed them. Like, I thought both of them were pretty decent. Yeah, they were like okay M Sims. They were H Bomber Guy, Chris Gullion's best friend. H Bomber Guy has an incredibly long video about Human Revolution that you should go and have a watch of. But Jade, it feels like in an industry where the things that are making money are these big IPs, to chuck away 2 years of work on a fairly big IP seems a bit Embracer-ish.
Yeah, because it feels like they want to cling on to that nostalgia and this big IP, but maybe they're coming to realize, oh, maybe spending 5+ years on a immersive sim in a relatively niche franchise probably isn't the best move. Because when I think back to Mankind Divided, like, it wasn't as warmly received as Human Revolution was, but those fans of immersive sims still love it. But ultimately, it was like half of a game, and then the franchise was put on ice. And from what I read on this, it was in the works for 2 years and it was on track to entering full production. So are they just in a point now where they thought, oh, let's kill it now before we waste any more money and lay these people off or reallocate these resources? Because, I don't know, it's similar to like the games you see Arkane making now. Is it worth doing big budget immersive sims like this when the audience you're appealing to is never going to match like a big live service or anything like that?
Yeah, it's like it's honestly strange, because when I saw that it was like, oh, 2 years of work, it still doesn't click in my head that because these games take a decade now, 2 years of work on something is like not a lot. It's like, oh, well, they've probably got quite a lot of stuff done.
We made a lore Bible. It's in a Google Doc somewhere.
We've decided on a subhead for it. Chris, I think when this Embracer saga's all said and done, the trail of bodies from purely games that could have been perspective will be pretty unprecedented. Oh, what did you think when you heard
this? It's grim, and it's just... It blows my mind that a company that big, by all accounts, and again, we don't know the ins and outs of how this all can be, but by all accounts, so much of this is the consequence of one deal falling through. And this alleged deal, was it the Saudis or something that they were apparently doing this big deal with? And if you're running your business and hinging so many people's jobs and so many projects on one deal going through, that's an enormous gamble, and that's just an awful way to run a business. But yeah, you're right. It's going to be years and years and years before we get a full idea of all the stuff that's been abandoned as a result of this. The kind of numerous games that could be brilliant with, that could have been great with a bit of extra time. But the problem is, games are becoming so expensive to make. And although it seems like companies like Embracer Group have an endless pit of money, they clearly don't. And you can pump so much money into a game, but the more money you pump into a game, the more copies it's got to sell when it comes out. Mm. And presumably they've thought, well, we've put so much money into Deus Ex now, that is this game going to shift 5 million copies or 10 million copies or something that enough to make it be considered a big success? And there's just very few franchises these days that can do that. So the costs need to come down, which is difficult to do in an industry where the players constantly demand more detail and bigger games and stuff like that. The budgets have to go up, but there has to be a point where it hits a peak and the budgets start coming down again, because it's not workable just now. As it is just now, like games, your game has to be a massive blockbuster success, otherwise. Like it's a disaster. It can't be one or the other.
Yeah, you hear the stories of when those Tomb Raider games would come out and do well by any estimation, and then Square were like, disaster, absolute flops.
It sold 9 million copies. Sod it, mate. Yeah. Behind the shed, like, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, no streams. Games can only sell like Spider-Man numbers or nothing. There is nothing else.
And even Spidey was like cutting the line on breaking even. Like, yeah, if you look at some of that Insomniac stuff.
Yeah, that's the amount of money spent on that game seems like
ridiculous.
Embezzlement. Anyway, story number two. The Switch 2 will have an 8-inch LCD screen, according to an analyst. Omida analyst Hiroshi Hayase says the next console will be, as the main reason why shipments of amusement displays, which me and you call screens, have been doubled in 2024. These are the Donnies that are plugged in to the actual factories that are making these things. So you imagine this is the smoking gun. This is how it goes. I, for one, am annoyed but not surprised that we're going back to shitty LCD. Chris, as a man with an 8-inch LCD, if you know what I'm saying, how do you feel about this?
Just trying to think of the acronym that LCD stands for, but we'll probably leave it there. I can get the L and the C, but the D's. I don't mind. Like, I prefer OLED screens to LED screens, LCD screens, or whatever the hell it is. But I don't think the difference is enormous enough that I'm not going to get a Switch 2 or whatever it ends up being called. Like, it'll be disappointing. But like, the first Steam Deck had a perfectly fine screen, I thought. The first Switch, even, I thought the screen's fine. If that means an update a few years down the line, then so be it. But I would rather get a slightly cheaper system, because if that was an OLED screen and an 8-inch screen, and the current Switch OLED is 7-inch screen, and I'm reliably informed that 1-inch makes a lot of difference. So an 8-inch OLED would ramp that price up even further than it's probably already going to be. The suggestions are already that it's going to cost at least $100 more than the Switch did at launch, and that's not with an OLED screen, so you can only imagine how much more that would be ramped up if it came out all singing and all dancing. So
problem is I want the option. I mean, I don't pay for games, obviously, but I want the option that a theoretical Jordan would, because I would pay 100 more quid for a better screen. Because the problem is, once you see an OLED Switch, my partner's got an original Switch, you go back and you're like, get this out of my eyes, I want to die here. The only counterpoint is the PSP, the PlayStation Portal, is an LCD screen, and that's nice. I think my main issue is the bezel. Like, you know how the bezel on the original Switch screen, it's got these massive black bars, it's like you've got glaucoma. If it's a tip-to-tip 8-inch LCD screen, it could be okay. Jade, if given the option, would you go for the OLED version of the Switch Twa, or are you just going to accept this LCD nonsense?
I'd go OLED, because I'm having played the Switch OLED primarily now. It is hard to go back.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I dock my Switch most of the time, so it's not the end of the world it being an LCD. So long as it's like backwards compatible and doesn't screw me over in terms of games and stuff, I guess I don't mind. But this just gives Nintendo that opportunity to go, like, a year down the line, oh, and here's the OLED model, if you fancy it. And because we're all dickheads, we'll all buy that anyway.
Oh, back to me.
Let me tell you, I don't care if it's got a dot matrix screen. I just want Nintendo to put achievements in the bloody thing.
Me too, and
themes,
brother.
Themes for the bloody themes, user interface. The
themes as well. Like, integrate a Game Boy camera if you need to. Just give me my achievements.
I so totally agree that the Switch 2 should have achievements. The amount of the sound library that they have that they could choose as their achievement noise, like, you know it's going to be a banger.
Oh, they can be different for each franchise as well.
Exactly.
Can you imagine?
Like, it could be something special. The integrity does not matter. I like having a roadmap of, I've finished this game, what are some suggested things I could go and do to, like, fill up this little bar?
As much as I love the Switch, it is the least Nintendo system. There's nothing fun about it when you switch it on, and I can understand maybe why, because the Wii U was so bogged down with shenanigans that the thing took 4 months to load up every time you turned it on. So I get it that this is a streamlined, quick way of loading everything, but imagine the stuff they could do with achievements that could actually genuinely be more than just a running tally of kind of accomplishments. So they could do so much kind of clever stuff with that, whether it's like unlocking things for your front end or whatever. It's like, it's so to speak. But yeah, I think it's, I would just love to see what they do with it, because you know it wouldn't just be straightforward, it would be something quite clever. And
yeah,
they're missing out in terms of multi-platform games as well. The number of Xbox games I buy instead of PlayStation, purely because I started collecting achievements before I collected trophies, and so given the choice between two identical games, I'll get the Xbox version every time. If Nintendo starts doing that, I might switch to Nintendo instead and start again from that. So,
oh God, same. That's a scary thought.
I was an achievement boy until my third Red Ring console made me, like, completely switch off Xbox and get a PS3, and I didn't have the foresight to, like, remember my Xbox Live login or anything like that. So when I eventually got an Xbox One for Titanfall, I just started a new account. So my achievements don't feel like they mean much, because I had, like, the Gears one? The one for getting, like, 60 billion kills or whatever? Like, I had all that stuff. I did all that pish. And now all my greatest achievements, or trophies, if you will, are on PlayStation, such as the Platinum Trophy for the Green Lantern game.
A Red Ring's a sore one to take.
It's the worst. 3 Red Rings? I mean...
What a week.
I know. Couldn't sit down. Story number 3. PDP debuts the first look at the new Rock Band / Fortnite Festival guitar controller, the Riffmaster, it will be called. There'll be two versions of it, one for PS4, PS5, and one for Xbox Series and Xbox One. Yeah, the Riffmaster.
The Rizmaster.
They call me the Rizmaster General. According to IGN, who's had hands-on with peripheral, 36 hours battery life off of one charge, which is not bad. And the guitar can be like folded in half to put away. There is no price thus far. Chris, how much is this going to come in at?
$89.99.
Bro,
I see that. Yeah.
I think you are smoking hashish. I think this is 150 quid. I think this is. Yes, PDP's peripherals are extortionate. I think they'll go. The only people that are going to buy this are either Rock Band 4 Psychos or people that are playing Fortnite Festival, or, you know, see if you want to play a Guitar Hero like game with any music that you could possibly want. I'll just say Google Clone Hero, right? I don't like mentioning it too often, but Google Clone Hero.
Or you could do it legitimately and do what PDP stands for, clearly, and pay that price when it comes
buy
out.
Buy a V-Bucks and be a good customer.
Yeah, how much is it gonna cost in V-Bucks?
$89.99.
I think this is gonna be quite expensive. It comes with replaceable faceplates, so the 360 generation never died. Yeah. You rip it off and then put a wood paneled one on like an Atari. The most embarrassing 360 faceplate I had was I had the Final Fantasy 13 one with lightning on it. So it was just these days I would rock that, but when I was a 15-year-old boy, I felt deeply ashamed about having this pink haired glass on my Xbox. I know. this is a fucking Halo 3 console for the lads. It's like nowadays, give me the pinkest controller going, please. But yeah, I'm desperate to try this out on Rock Band and Fortnite Festival, nothing else. I don't know why this is split into two different configurations, though, because, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, aren't Xbox controllers Bluetooth now anyway? It's not like that weird specific standard that it was for the 360 controllers.
They are, but there's something funny about certain peripherals, I think. Because the Xbox One not need a dongle for Rock Band controllers. There's something dongly involved.
Definitely.
For licensing reasons or whatever, you can't just get full access to, because you can get controllers that are Bluetooth for PC but need to be wired for an Xbox, I believe. I don't know, I can't remember exactly, but yeah, there's something, certainly with PlayStation, like there's only one wireless third party controller for the PlayStation, and it's like costs a bomb and it's got half the functionality missing, so I can understand why that needs a dongle. But I don't know, technology, remember you used to just plug them in.
The
Atari 2600 joystick worked in the Mega Drive and vice versa. You can plug a Mega Drive controller into an Atari or an Amiga or a Spectrum and it all worked. No dongles.
Back in the day. Me and Jade were born in like 2004. Our first memories were fucking iCarly, so we're not getting any of this stuff. Next
Club
story.
Penguin.
Club Penguin. I was a Habbo Hotel man. Jade, were
I
you
played
a Club?
Like Adventure Quest. I can't remember what it was called.
Adventure Ooh. Quest? What, yeah, as in like the adventure game?
No, it was like a really shit turn-based RPG you can play. I wonder if it still exists. Google
the
it.
Developer of Adventure Quest has listened to this and just drove off the A4.
Apparently, oh my god.
It came out on July 21st, 2002. And it looks pish. It looks formative.
Sorry, developer of Adventure Quest.
He literally just got back in his car.
Adventure Quest 3D is on Steam, free to play. Oh my god,
it's still going.
Let's Adventure Quest 3D only came out in 2022. We need to get on this. Why are we not the world's biggest Adventure Quest podcast?
There's a lot of content to be mined from this.
Yeah. It looks like these
stuff
characters.
Like DeviantArt shit.
It looks like stuff that would pop up in the sidebar when I'm watching like an illegal stream of a Premier League game. It's like, come and play this sexy game. It's like,
See, my early days of online escapades were about 98. There was a Tamagotchi Fever website, it was called, and it had its own wee chat room. And there was also a Yahoo chat room about Beanie Babies. And as a young troll, that's I would be about 14, 15 at this point, I would go into the Beanie Babies Yahoo chat room and pretend that there was a Scottish Beanie Baby called Braveheart the Horse, and all the Americans would lose their shit trying to get me to buy Braveheart the Horse and send it to them, even though it was non-existent.
What did you send them?
I sent them nothing. I sent them nothing but empty dreams.
Human excrement. Story number four, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth is the 30th game to earn a coveted Famitsu 40. If you're not aware, Famitsu claims to have four different people review the same game, and they each score it out of 10, making up the 40. The game here is, I'm going to read you out some Famitsu 40s, and you two can both tell
me. Isn't it like Resi 6 or something?
There is some absolute channels.
There's a very questionable Nintendo DS one.
Can't trust game journalists.
You certainly cannot. Okay, we'll go from
Nintendo
the
10 dogs. Okay, I'm gonna not ruin the surprise.
We will do a yes or no for some of these.
But as to whether we agree or not.
Yeah, whether we agree, it's a 40. Just give me a yes or no. It can be at the same time. It can be whenever you want it. The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Yes.
Okay. Soul Calibur.
Yes.
Yes.
The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
No.
No. Metal... That's like a 38.
Some guy was like, Zelda. And he was like, all right. Yeah. The blades need to bleed.
Bayonetta.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
I'll go yeah.
Pokemon Black and White?
No.
Okay. No.
I see you sending me very subtle signals, shaking your head like wild.
Heart Gold and Soul Silver, now we're talking, but another, oh God. I assume this is the one you're referring to. Kid Icarus Uprising.
No, I was referring to Nintendogs. I thought that was a questionable
point. Oh, bro. Nintendo's more a 40 than Kid Icarus Uprising. IMO, Jade, Kid Icarus Uprising, yes or no? 40 out of 40?
Nah.
No.
I enjoyed it, but it controlled like an anus. That certainly
you needed that bloody two left hands.
that extra, remember that horrible extra
trackpad pro or whatever.
The nipple.
Yeah, the extra circle pad that attached all the way around the thing just to put one analog.
Give it to
on.
Him for saying, oh yeah, we know this game controls like hot garbage, so it's something to put on your DS.
Oh Jesus Christ. If you're a Legend of Zelda game or you were created by Hideo Kojima, you've got a free pass to 40 in Famitsu.
I bet MGS4 got a 40.
It did. As did MGS5.
As did
MGS Peace Walker. See, there's
we're
a pure rap.
Like MGS Piss Taker.
There we go. There's a
Ghost
pure
of Tsushima. God.
Oh really? Ghost of Tsushima is a good game, but not a 40. Come
Final
on.
Fantasy 13 2. What are you smoking?
Jade, I want us to go to Japan and go to the Famitsu offices and just stand outside with this list.
Final
Fantasy 13 2.
Now that we've thoroughly deconstructed the Famitsu 40. Where's FIFA 13?
Yeah. More interestingly, here's a list of games that didn't make it.
These are 39s, aren't they?
Yeah, here's your close calls. Tekken 3, come on. That's a banger.
No, that's
game.
A 40.
Kingdom Hearts 2, that's like a fucking 15 out of 40 in my opinion. Sorry, George. Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence didn't make it.
Oh, that seems like, it's not my fav Metal Gear, but like,
yeah. FIFA 12 just didn't make
it. There it is. They love it over there. It's, so they're all about winning 11.
Yeah, that's true. The Last of Us Part 2. Elden Ring's a surprising one. I would have put the house on Elden Ring getting a 40. But yeah,
surprising. The Last of Us 2 scored quite high because see how many of those are Western games, Western developed. Because it's one of the things the article kind of focused on is that there are like 30 games that got a Famitsu 40, but only 6 of them also got a 10 in Edge. I think because culturally it's so different that. There's like one visual novel or something got a Famitsu 40, which obviously nobody in the West would touch, more or less. There's
I don't know. If you're writing for Edge, you've got a good chance. Like, if it's a visual novel, a 10, if you ask me.
There's a JoJo game here with a 40 by CyberConnect. Like, what?
Those Attack on Titan games that are basically just replays of the series, give them both 80s. Yeah, it is. Are you talking about 428 Shibuya Scramble on the Wii? The everybody's favorite.
That's the one
that got ported to like PS4, right?
Yeah, I did. Yes, Famitsu 40.
One of my favorite scrambles.
Yeah, just right next to Screwball, right up there.
And your occasional scramble outside a wedding. Yeah, you don't do that anymore. Like throw coins at weddings.
No. Who's got coins? They just throw contactless cards.
That's it. They just throw Nando's black cards or whatever it is.
What a contemporary reference.
I've not played Infinite Wealth yet, though. A copy is on the way, so
Infinite Wealth.
I'll get you Famitsu.
Infinite Wealth is a banger.
I've heard it's a banger.
In my opinion. Last story, because we've got big games to talk about in this second half. Universal has shown off the first images of Super Nintendo World Orlando in their new Epic Universe Resort, which is a bit of a mouthful of a name. They showed off one of the new gates coming to that. It's got five separate themes. It's got all your shite that's in your... it's How to Train Your Dragon, The Island of Berk, which...
Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Here's the thing, isn't the insult Berk like
rhyming
slang for Barclay Hunt, aka like, so what are we doing here on the island of Berk? Serving
it's different
Berk
over there. It's
yeah.
Time.
The island of Fanny. Celestial oh Park, God. Which I have no idea about. Dark Universe, the Dark Universe is back, baby. Come on.
So they're just excited. Reusing all of those assets they could make films on, like, which I kind of respect. Like,
we've
oh,
got 100,000 t-shirts here. We need to get the Dark Universe going again.
We put Tom Cruise in Kojima's scanner. We need to do something with it.
The fourth of the five will be another Harry Potter park. However, the most ridiculous thing about this is, like, I read the announcement and it was like, it's based on the Ministry of Magic. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. That's like an iconic thing for the series. And Wizarding Paris. And I was like,
what?
When did they go to Wizarding Paris? It's from the Fantastic Beasts films.
No one saw those.
Those showstoppers.
All two people that went to the midnight screening of the Fantastic Beasts trilogy were like, oh, Wizarding Paris. Wee, it's so exciting.
Oh, mate, finally.
my wife took me to see that. Like, she took me to see some Twilight films and then she took me to see Fantastic Beasts. This is a man who's never read a Harry Potter book or seen a Harry Potter film. Really?
I'm a gamer.
And I've never been so confused in my life just sitting watching this shite.
I saw the first Fantastic Beasts in uni. I might have been high at the time.
For my sins, I have now seen all of them. The third one, I can't even remember what happens in it.
Was
there
a third one?
There was meant to be five. They made three and they were like, lads, that's enough.
That'll do.
Isn't Mads Mikkelsen like Wizard Hitler or something?
Yeah, pretty much. Because originally it was Colin Firth or Farrell, which is the Colin Firth.
Farrell, that's
yeah. It was Colin Farrell, then it was Johnny Depp, great choice. And then it was Mads Mikkelsen. But they planned out to make five and it would get to like Harry Potter era. And then after the third one, they were like,
yeah,
J.K. Rowling cannot write a script for Toffee. Like,
Hogwarts Legacy is bringing in the big bucks. Shut this down.
Yeah, I know. It's like, we don't need to bother with this pish. The Fantastic Beasts franchise, where they were like, see that big snake that Voldemort had? That everyone was like, that's cool, that's just a big snake. It was actually a Korean woman. She was an animagus. She was a Korean woman that was cursed to be a snake. And then someone asked J.K.R. about this, and she was like, I've had this idea for 19 years. Someone made a
she
great
doesn't
joke.
Know what career is.
Someone made a great joke that when she was sitting in that cafe in Edinburgh, all she wrote down was, little boy wizard who goes to a magic school, the snake is a Korean lady. That's it. Those were the first
two lines. Two lines on a napkin, she thought, this is it.
Jackpot. It's good that cafe burned down. The Super Mario...
Oh, did it? Wicked.
the Super Mario... Super Nintendo World... will presumably incorporate like the Donkey Kong stuff that's going on in Japan. Like, how banging does it need to be, Chris, for you, Mr. Anti-Flying, to be like, right, family, we're gone. This is the year we do our big Universal trip.
I would go to be honest, it's not so much the flying just now that would put me off as just the idea of taking what would next year be a six-year-old to Universal for like, because if you're going to Universal,
you do Disney as well.
You need to do Disney as well. You're talking a 2.5-3 week holiday where you have to do everything, all the parks and all. So I just don't think she'd have the stamina for it. So it's something I would definitely do, but maybe when she's like 10 or something and she can remember it better. But because that's one you do once and then don't do it again until she's like 40. So yeah, I'm up for it. I'm not as anti-flying as I was. That trip to Japan took it out of me, I think, a bit. I would still need a bloody good reason to do it. But I'm partly over it now, so I would definitely go back. Yeah, I'd definitely go to this if there's a reason for it.
Did you beat any of the Nintendo parks? I went to the LA one and famously thought it was pish.
No, I was in LA like October of 2022 when they were just finishing it, so we could like peek over the fence and have a look. But I've never been. Like next time I go to LA, I'll probably try. Or
full of Amish people. I don't know if that's a feature, but it's certainly based on my experience. Absolutely hoaching with Amish people.
Did they just have like a day out the time you were there?
I mean, see, it might be in Rumspringa. Is that what that is? That's a concept I only know for American TV programs, so that might not even be real. But they were all kicking about. Very polite people. But
I know it's going to cost me like £500 to do everything there. So it's
So I went when I was there for that Jedi trip, and I was, you could buy like a half day or a mock, because the Hollywood park's tiny. It's like really, really small.
No, it's not very big. It's mainly escalators.
Yeah. It's like, okay, there's Hogwarts, Springfield, down there's Nintendo, and that's it. Have fun. So you can do that dead quickly. Obviously, Disney is like the size of a small like nation state.
And in Anaheim, so it's far out of the way.
But yes, after the break, after we come back, we have lots of games to talk about. Including, oh no, I can't talk about that until next week. We preview, we'll talk about something else next week, but we'll see you in a minute.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we are back. I've done a lot of chatting, so I want you two to chat. Last weekend was the great... No, it wasn't the greatest Royal Rumble. That was another one. It was the Royal Rumble.
It was Royal Rumble.
It was a Royal Rumble. Certainly wasn't
the greatest. It didn't have 40 people. It wasn't in Saudi Arabia. So no. It was the greatest.
And it also wasn't very good. Except for the women's Rumble was great.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was better than the men's one this year.
Definitely.
Yeah, Well, apologies for the wrestling. In fact, no apologies.
Yeah, we're about to talk about wrestling games. So to be fair, if you're not into wrestling, then you're going to
be who you want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The women's match was good. I thought Jade Cargill got a good showing. That's a good way to debut her.
House.
The men's one was really disjointed. It was just like there was.
It only
it was really
picked
bitty,
up like when Cody Rhodes came in, I think. Yeah. Beyond that, it was like they were struggling to tell stories.
They basically made an art. Like the women's one, you genuinely couldn't really tell who was going to get it. But the men's one made a mistake by having like an 18-minute promo 2 weeks before, in which Cody Rhodes and CM Punk blatantly made it clear they were going to be the last two in the ring. Yeah. And then it was just like essentially waiting an hour for them to be the only two left, and then which of the two is going to win it?
No, because in person there, they did like an announcement on the loudspeaker going, only one person has won back-to-back Rumbles, and it was Stone Cold. Could Cody Rhodes do it? And I was like, well, Cody's going to win then, isn't he?
It was kind of like, I knew he was going to win it when the Rock did an interview on ESPN or something, and they were talking about him fighting Roman Reigns, and he made a comment about how he needed to build these things slowly. So I was like, well, he's not going to be at this WrestleMania then. If they're going to do the Rock versus Roman, it's going to be next.
They won't need a title for that. Like I think Cody Rhodes will finish his story at this Mania, and then The Rock will come in because he's not doing any movies anymore because Black Adam was shite. So it's kind of like...
Sorry, the hierarchy of the DC cinematic universe is about to change with the release of Black Adam, Jaden. Yeah. I think you'd do well to remember that, frankly. but more importantly than that, Jade, you were there. You were live and in person. You were in living color at the greatest Royal Rumble.
It was.
You weren't just there on a jolly, you were there to play WWE 2K24. Subsequently, Popper Chris Scullion has also played WWE 2K24. So, Jade, you kick us off. What do you think of 2K24, and what did you get to play? What were the options? What kind of matches are we talking here?
So, we played about 3-4 hours. We were kind of let loose onto the game, well, a certain build of the game, while we like did interviews and all of this other stuff. But we played a build which included the ambulance match and the backstage brawl.
Nice.
And then just a few generic match types, really, with a couple of like new members of the roster and so on. But yeah, it was, as you'd expect from like now they're back to annual releases, it does feel like iterative rather than innovative. It's like, oh, we're nip and tucking, we're adding a few new match types, and we're updating the roster and all of that stuff. Mm. But given that last year's game was like relatively strong for what these games are and have been for a long time,
yeah,
I was like, oh yeah, they're updating the right things, they're not overextending, and they're having fun with it. And I think when they had that break in, when I think it was 2K20, which was absolute dog, and then they took a year off.
Yeah, it was absolute dog.
Yeah, that's like what they called it in person while I was over there. But they realize that these games don't need to be complicated or realistic. They just need to be fun and silly and true to the sport, as it were. And yeah, I think my impressions coming away from that was it doesn't change the game or do anything especially compelling, really, but they're just improving on it gradually. Like, the ambulance match is great. It's a good gimmick. The backstage brawl is surprisingly interactive with some of the environments you play around with. Like, there's an elevator. I could just throw Seth Rollins in, run up to the top, and then just chuck him off the banister, which was like 20 feet, so he should be dead.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous. Oh,
is it the same backstage area from last year's game, do we know, or have they changed it up? Or is it the same kind of structure, Chris? Yeah.
It's the same one, but they've added to it. So, like, they've added a lift. You know, before you had to go up the ladder and take them up the ladder if you wanted to throw them into that big weird fan thing?
Yeah.
There's now a lift just behind that you can go into, an elevator for any Americans listening. Ah. So you could theoretically put someone on their arse on the floor level, then go up in the lift and jump on them if you were quick enough, theoretically.
I see.
But yeah, but by and large, it's a similar area. There's new kind of breakable glass in some places.
Yeah.
You can throw weapons, which is something.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so fun.
And it's like it feels, Hitman. It just locks on.
It feels like it did back in, is it No Mercy that it had the weapon thrown like back in the day? It feels a lot like that. You can stand and just like, the accuracy is incredible. I was only playing the CPU, so I couldn't tell how easy it is to dodge that or block it or even grab it out there. So
I hope it tracks you.
It's going to be interesting to see how annoying that becomes. Yeah, I think it does. But hopefully there's a button we can press to just kind of grab it out there, because that would be even better.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be amazing.
Like that clip of Hitman when he threw like a hammer and the guy walks around the corner and the hammer just like follows him around. That's all I want.
I deliberately got a shovel, ran up to the entranceway, and left someone at the other side of the ring, and I just chucked it, and it almost like had a mind of its own.
Nice.
Just twatted them with the head, and I thought, if this is a bug, they need to keep it in. This is pretty good.
I saw a thing saying there's a free camera now. Is that true?
There is, yeah. Mm. If you're in the Royal Rumble, because I didn't enter first, you can essentially just get a free cam and zoom around the arena and the wrestlers, which is ridiculous, but if you can disable the UI and stuff, that could be good for like photo mode shenanigans, because the crowds look like arse in this game, but like the big wrestlers and stuff, like it's on par with like the NBA 2K games. Like, it's really impressive.
Chris, how'd you find it?
I liked it. Like Jade says, it's very much, I was surprised Ric Flair wasn't in this build, because it is very much an evolution. Yeah, I
mean,
evolution.
That joke didn't woo me personally.
Oh, good. That's right. He says that, didn't he? Yeah. I thought it was quite good. I'm happy with it. I'm very much a fan of 2K23. So again, I was hoping they didn't. You know what these games are like. You're always going to get an online community, many of whom are probably going to be listening to this or watching the subsequent video I'm going to make. 2K, you're always going to have a community saying, fix the game is terrible, and then not really explaining why. So there will always be haters when 2K24 comes out, but if it's anything like what I played, I probably won't be one of them. I've enjoyed what I played. I thought the ambulance match, even though at its core the ambulance match is pretty basic, I just got a kick out of something different for once. Being able to literally powerbomb a guy into the ambulance. And then it's basically a case of you close the doors and it's two button bashing minigames to close one door and then the other door, and that's it. That's how you win. So in that sense, it's pretty basic. It's not any different really from a submission match, except that this, the processing, it's starting the button bashing is just more complicated. But just stuff like being able to throw people, you can both climb to the top of the ambulance and you can throw someone off the ambulance, which I thought was quite irritating. The ambulance is like comically large. Like, I think larger than ambulances probably should be. It's like the sort of ambulance you would send to, like, if there's a crush at a festival.
it's one of those like Rose Ed ambulances, like, yeah, from a WWE event. You need to be able to see it.
One of those ambulances they can take like 30 people. Well. Yeah, exactly. So that's then, because there's casket matches. We didn't get to try that in our build.
No.
The showcase was in there. Did you get the showcase mode, Jade?
Yeah, I played Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley and Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns from last year's WrestleMania, where he lost. And I think showcase is really cool in regards to like a production standpoint. Like, it's very like lavishly produced documentaries, and it's cool the way it blends real life footage with the game. But I also think it kind of pigeonholes you as a wrestling game, because it's like, do these very specific things or we'll punish you for it or you won't get anything, which that's still there and it sucks, but it's cool. As like a wrestling fan, it's fun to revisit those stories and see WWE pay them the respect that you think they should, instead of just like treating everything as a joke. But that seems largely unchanged, except this year it's doing 40 years of WrestleMania, so it's just going to span across four decades.
Because the three matches in it were the two you said, Rhea and Charlotte, Cody and Roman, and then like the Ultimate Warrior versus Rick Rude from like WrestleMania 5, which was quite weird.
A classic.
But because you always play as a winner, you have to be Rick Rude and be up the Warrior, which I thought was quite interesting. But Jay's right. It's very much the same as it has been in other years. It's like, do this move, then this move, then this move, until it triggers a cutscene. And then it does that slingshot tech they've started perfecting, where it switches to live action for a wee bit. Although this time Corey Graves is commentating over it. So it's not just kind of a blank, like just sitting watching like random footage. Corey Graves comes in and says, he tried to attack her with a clothesline, but this happened. Like, okay, thanks, Corey. I've got eyes, mate. It's one of those moves you'll play. It's one of those modes you'll play through at once to unlock all the unlockables. And then probably never touch it again, but it's a nice wee kind of memory lane situation for the 5 or 6 hours it'll probably take to get through it. It was nice. I'm just generally happy with it. I'd like to see more of the wrestlers' likenesses, because I don't know if it was just the particular PC build I was playing. I think some of them looked a wee bit off. The sweat was really, they're really sweaty now for some reason. I don't know if that just affects roasting. It. They're just absolutely, those arenas can get quite temperate. But I don't know if that was one of the reasons, but I don't know, just some of the likenesses looked a tiny wee bit off, and I'd like to have it sitting side by side with 2K23 so I can see if it's not just in my head, or if they actually genuinely have changed at quite a degree. But so far so good. I think I'm curious to see what my faction's the one I want to see more of, because my faction is my favorite and also most hated mode in 2K23. Because the amount of, it's not even nickel and diamond, it's like $30 and $40 in you.
paper and credit cards.
It's incredible the price of that mode. So I want to see how they handle that, because so far the idea is sound, but they've handled the microtransactions horribly, even for 2K. So I'm curious to see that in the final build. But so far I'm happy with how it plays, at least. They've not messed about with it too much.
Here's a question though, for both of you. If you're going to do a 40 years of WrestleMania match mode, bear in mind who they have the rights to. What are the must-have matches? Because the when I think of the must-have WrestleMania match, they literally cannot do it because they don't have the Hardys and they don't have Edge and Christian. So it's a bit strange.
Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker.
Like, well, yeah. Five, yeah, that's two of them knocked out.
You've got to have... Sorry, you go,
not being able to do those ladder matches is a big one. Those are so iconic.
You've got to have the gimmick battle royale.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna go license all of those guys.
The one that the Iron Sheik won because he literally didn't have the knees to go over the top ropes.
Yeah.
So you can do that one.
John Cena versus The Big Show, that would be a good showcase move.
You won't get him. Paul White's
he's an AEW. Yeah.
He's currently on the Jerry Cruise.
They're all locked, so we couldn't see what they were putting in. So it's gonna be interesting.
Like no Jericho, so you don't get any of those Jericho matches.
No Vince McMahon if there's any justice.
Ooh. Yeah, they probably had him and went, oh, fuck.
Quick, patch him out. Yeah, you'll just get a character just called Da Boss. Just like a
it's like when they did the Stone Cold Shawn Michaels match the year they didn't have Tyson's likeness, so it was just some random Asian man in a DX t-shirt pretending to be Mike Tyson. They just called him
horrendous.
The Enforcer. It was like, come on now.
That was horrendous.
I wonder if they do a lot of modern matches then.
I bet they do. Like, I bet they pack it.
It looks like it's hard to tell in the showcase what's in it because obviously they only give you three matches. But from what I can glean just by kind of looking at the menus a bit, and it seems like it's mainly a lot of modern ones. It looks like it goes, and this is guesswork because, like I said, the only matches we know for certain are the three we played. I'm just guessing here. But it looks like it might be a few from the first 5 years. Then it skips ahead to like the middle, like the 20s, 30s, and then skips to the end. That's the impression I get, with maybe one or two in between. So
yeah,
it looks like it goes early, middle, late.
Undertaker's last match of Reigns. Well, last match.
Yeah, you could sit and work it out because it'll be Hogan and Andre because Hogan's in that trailer. Yeah. It'll be the Bret Hart Shawn Michaels match. It'll be Bret Hart Steve Austin. It'll be Michael Steve Austin. Then it'll get to the actual deal where they don't have the rights to anyone, and it'll be the weirdest matches you've ever seen. They'll pick. It'll be like, who was it? Kane versus Raven versus who?
Hardcore match.
And the hardcore match where they nearly took.
God,
I'm
such a nerd.
They nearly ran over the master power cable that would have taken power out of the whole stadium. I can't. That's the thing.
If they had any balls about them, they would give us Bart Gunn versus Butterbean in the brawl for all. I'd be well up for that, but they won't.
The Spectre at the Feast is he probably won't be in the main roster, but do you imagine CM Punk's the DLC?
Got to be,
yeah.
Got to be 100%. If they manage to get the Fiend in, not the Fiend, Cap, it's not Captain Howdy, is it? What was he called?
Mr. Uncle Howdy. Johnny Howdy?
Captain Howdy was The Exorcist. Some Uncle Howdy?
Uncle Howdy, yeah.
So that's it. Bray Wyatt's mate.
If they manage to get Uncle Howdy in, and he was pretty new when they announced the game, then they'll be able to fit CM Punk in as one of the DLC things.
Because they're doing Stardust as DLC, which is like Cody Rhodes' old persona. So they're clearly leaning on that nostalgia and stuff, which they did with the last one. Like they'll give CM Punk his own DLC back.
Yeah, yeah, I imagine the night of Survivor Series, the next morning, they were like, right, you five, just go and do this now, because this is like...
Make a model of Punk, do it.
His whole moveset's been in the games for like 15 years at this point, so like...
Go to sleep,
my dream eventually is for them just to bring out WWE 2K, for it just to be an ongoing game, because there's this My Faction stuff, redoing it every year, isn't going to work, and... just every time a wrestler comes out with a new t-shirt, which they do every 20 minutes, give us it within a week. And even if it's like a season thing where, oh, if you do X number of things, you unlock the shirt, or not that I would like this, but £2 unlocks the shirt or whatever. Like, make it a constantly evolving game. Because that's the one problem with these WWE games is that the lead times are so ridiculous that by the time a game comes out, it's already 4 months out of date. Whereas If you are updating it on like a fortnightly or a monthly basis with all the new content that has just happened in the actual show, and just make that a permanently occurring, people will buy season passes and people will, that thing will make money like permanently. But I don't know, that seems like a long way away. It doesn't seem like 2K. I think that's the future of games, but maybe not yet.
Preview on the gamer, Jade?
Yes, that'll be going up with a couple of other little bits and some videos and matches and me being getting my ass kicked.
Did you get to meet any wrestlers?
Yeah, I met Rhea Ripley, Cody Rhodes, Ricochet, and a few others.
I met Ricochet in the Cat House in Glasgow after an ICW show. Where I was, I had a Bullet Club t-shirt on. I was very Steven. I just went up to him. I was like, ah, I think I'm
Omos. That's a tool bloke. Like, oh my God.
Omos has a burgeoning TikTok career where he just talks about what aftershave he's wearing that day. It's great. He does like a full on millennial pause. He's like, hello, and today I'm going to be wearing this aftershave. It's very fruity and delicious. Fair play, Omos. Chris, you get to meet any wrestlers when you were down in London?
Not this time, no. The only two times I met wrestlers as part of... three times. I met the Bella Twins once for a photo shoot thing. I met Val Venus once. I don't know if I told... I think I've told this story before at a London house show. They put us in the VIP area and picked a wrestler who was like below mid-tier to come out. This is Val Venus near the end of his career. Came in, he was a really nice guy, blah, blah, blah. And as he left, I said, well, good luck tonight, mate. He says, nah, I'm losing. And the only other one I interviewed Mr. Kennedy when he was Mr. Kennedy.
Oh, I remember Mr. Kennedy.
And
yeah.
The interviewer was like asking about the wellness policy and all that. And he says, yeah, but like we would never take drugs and all that. And like 2 weeks later, he was out like for drugs. And it's like, yeah. Oh, mate, trust you, mate.
Mr. Smackbag himself.
But I found out that Cody Rhodes has never played a Final Fantasy game.
What a fake nerd.
Because he's Mr. Zelda for the longest time, isn't he? Yeah, he's Mr. Zelda. His tights and everything.
Gave us that iconic clip of Stone Cold saying Ocarina of Time's better than Breath of the Wild or whatever. I've met a couple of wrestlers. I met the original Sin Cara. He didn't speak much.
Masked?
Yeah, masked. Masked with a polo shirt on. So it's just a picture of me and him, and he's getting at that, and I'm like... I met AJ Lee, and I met CM Punk, both at the same thing. This was pre them shagging, I assume. but I'd like to think that I made that spark, I made that connection. Punk was actually very nice, but I assume that was because I was the first person in the queue to meet him, and he hadn't been like beaten down by the feeling of meeting all these sweaties.
My favorite celebrity encounter. to me, it highlights the friendliness of the Glaswegian people. It was at one of these kind of comic cons in Glasgow at the SECC, but this is like late 90s. So I think it was just called Memorabilia at the time. It was this pre MCM expo. And went to the toilet at one point, and there was Kenny Baker. Of R2-D2 fame being sick into a bin. And just as I was walking out, somebody walked over to him and just said, are you alright, wee man? And that was like, that might have been one of the great, I wasn't even involved in it, but it was still one of the greatest moments of my life.
I tangentially to that, I went to a signing for John Morrison at A1 Comics in Brayhead, and like everyone had queued up, and then he came out and did his pose and nobody fucking clapped. Everyone was like, yeah, John. And then he walked out to the queue and did it again and everyone clapped. So fucking embarrassing. I also met The Miz and R-Truth when they were the Awesome Truth. That was I met Kane and Daniel Bryan when they were a tag team as well. I used to go to all the wrestling signings in Glasgow. I went mental once though, because I waited at Smith's at the Forge in Glasgow for about 8 hours to meet Sheamus. And then when he turned up, this random family, look, I don't care if they had a sick child, they didn't wait, got to skip the queue and go first.
Ah, fuck off.
I know. I was absolutely devastated. Wrestling. Very briefly before we go, we'll have more on this next week, because this is hot off the press as we talk about this. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. I've had the review code for about 3 weeks now. I've been playing it every night.
Don't say that because people believe you.
I'm deep into the end game.
Yeah.
Joker's back.
I literally am deep into the end game, but it's only because I've been absolutely knocking my pan in playing it. The game came out on Monday night for people that bought the 100 quid version. Thankfully, I had very bad insomnia, so I was up till 9 a.m. playing it. I've now completed it. I really like it. I've talked about Jordan games a lot in the past. Your Borderlands 2s, your Tom Clancy's The Division 2s. It's a lot of kind of mindless shooting while numbers fly off of shit. All that stuff's fabulous. The story, which I kind of discounted beforehand, I was like, I never really thought about, but the Rocksteady DC stories are great. And this is another great Rocksteady DC story. Like, It brings all the Arkham stuff to a good close, despite what little fucking children on the internet have been crying about. Like,
it's a game called Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League.
Did the Justice League die?
Lads, the Justice League die. I'm sorry
to break this to you. But the Justice League cark it, and the way they do it is really smart. It's like the ones that don't deserve any reverence don't get any, and the ones like the Batman, for example, who you've spent all these games with, they take it seriously because it is an Arkham game. The way they integrate Superman and all that is really smart, in the sense that they don't start off and go, so he's the Man of Steel, he's for Krypton, he came over here, he's mum and dad. They're just like, you know who all these characters are, let's just go on with it.
Yeah,
let's
pretend you know who Superman is.
Yeah, let's pretend we've had games in the middle here that established all these. Imagine what they were about. That's fine. These are who these characters are now. And all that stuff's really well done. The stuff I don't like that I highlighted in the review, which is on VGC, all the missions feel like really small instances of stuff that have to be doable anywhere on the map. So enemies will just pop up in wee encampments with like batteries that you need to destroy. You do that and it finishes the mission. So you can be anywhere on the map and that could happen to you in like a live season kind of content thing. There are a few main missions. Like there's one where you go through like a kind of a Batman experience. It's like a museum for Batman, but evil Batman has turned it into like a jump scare house. And that's really good.
It's in a trailer. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that stuff's cool. But there's not many of those, which is quite disappointing because I feel like you could get away with loads of that stuff. But yeah, I really like it. I mean, it's super one of my games and it won't do things for a lot of people, but it's not this live service like suicide note for Rocksteady that people were kind of prescribing for it. Jade, you said you were keen but not 50 quid keen.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, but hearing you makes me a bit more curious because I know I'd be more interested in the narrative and the character side as opposed to collecting all of the loot and stuff like that. But as someone who was really invested in that Arkham trilogy, I probably liked Arkham Knight more than a lot of other people did. It is something I want to play, mostly out of curiosity.
Yeah.
What character did you go with in the end? Are they
Harley? Treat it like a Harley single player sequel, and it's okay. It seems very geared to be like Harley as the main character because she gets all the big emotional beats. I mean, she is the through line. She was the kind of secondary main character to the,
because it's the same version from the Arkham games, so like people will be clinging to that.
She's dealing with the post Joker stuff. Like there's a bit where you go into the Batman museum and it's like him holding the Joker from the end of night and they talk about that. It's like it's really, really good. It's got tons of stuff. This is where the part of it being a live service falls down, and I'm glad I can play it in single player because you want to walk around that museum and look at everything and listen to everything while your pals are going like, yeah, I got a chicken tikka masala for my dinner tonight. It was shite. It took 2 hours to come. And in the meantime, like, Kevin Conroy's like giving it socks, God rest him.
Oh, God, yeah.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. Chris, were you into the... Why do I feel like... Is the Arkham games on your backlog or something? Like, why do I feel like...
And everything else is, so it might as well be. Yeah, yeah. yes, all three Arkham games are... Is it three?
Arkham games there's four, but three Rocksteady ones.
We don't count Origins. Yeah.
Three real ones are on my backlog. Should I do those first before Suicide Squad?
Do them first and you'll get a lot more out of Suicide Squad. Like, I feel like it doesn't fall apart, but it's a weaker experience if you're not, especially from a story perspective, if you're not kind of into the Arkham stuff and you don't kind of get the tone of where things were going. Because I was surprised how easily they fit metahumans into it, because the Arkham games are all just Batman stuff, so it's pretty grounded. But
yeah,
the way they're written, it's like, oh yeah, they could totally exist in the Arkham universe. Deborah Wilson's in it as Amanda Waller. She's great. She's great in everything.
Oh yeah, she's good in everything, isn't she?
Yeah. Also, it looks mental. It's like one of the best looking games ever. Like, it's so crazy. There's a bit in it where you're like doing like a selfie video and I was like, are those like actors in makeup? Like, and I was like, oh, maybe I'm just super tired. And then Dash Wood, friend of the show, messaged me being like, is this like one of the best game looking games ever? I was like, yes. It's the facial capture stuff is mad. But yeah, cool game. There'll be more on it next week when I've digested the end game content. I want to talk about the end game content next week, because the way they do it's it's really smart, but it's also a bit of a spoiler, so we'll talk about that next week. Very briefly, what have we got? What have we got going on this week, folks? Jade, you ill? Are you off? Or are you good?
I'm ill at the moment. I was kind enough to drop in for the podcast, but we've got WWE 2K24 stuff going up tomorrow. Then a few more bits on Persona 3 Reload review went out this week too.
Oh, did you review it for Das Gamer?
Yes, I did.
What do you think of it? I've only had time to play a wee touch of it. I'm enjoying it so far, but I'm not like a big Persona 3 zealot. So how is it?
I gave it 4 out of 5, and Persona 3 was my first big game in that series, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think I went into this with a lot of like nostalgia and built-in criticism about how it was going to adapt this game in the model of Persona 5. And I think it does a really good job with like the battle system and updating the characters so they aren't as like, I don't know, like gross and anime and fan servicey. Like, I feel like the writing is stronger, the social links are better, and it does look great. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Like, the menus are incredible. Like, the use of color is so impressive. I think it's like 4K and ray traced on console, which is like kind of crazy for that kind of game. But also, I feel like it tries too hard to mimic the style and the presentation of something like Persona 5 instead of leaning into like the gothic melancholy of the original Persona 3. It is that game quite faithfully in the majority of ways, but you are pulled out of it sometimes because they're trying to, instead of going their own way, they're like, oh, this needs to fall in line with what Persona 5 was. And like the homogenization of like that series and what it's become means that the Reload let me down in a few ways, but that doesn't stop it from being like a really strong RPG.
Good. I will get to that if I get a bit of a break. I've got it on deck as well, so
it seems like a good deck game.
Yeah, it's the trip deck game going forward. Chris, WWE coverage from you this week?
Yeah, by the time you hear this, there'll be a written preview up, a video montage thing. I've just kind of shown various match types, and then I'll put a full ambulance match up. We'll be very careful not to include the theme music at the start because good old YouTube might undo all the hard work.
Why don't we just voice over the themes like that?
Yeah, we just cover it.
Well, it's Randy Orton, so everyone has a
voice exactly. In my hair.
And the other one's at LA Night, so you can just go every 2 minutes and job done.
Oh, mate, see, when I went to the fucking house show in Glasgow, walking out of that, I was like, I'm going to commit an atrocity here because everybody was just going,
any excuse. Yeah. So there'll be that. Other than that, I don't have a lot on my deck in terms of reviews. So like, Alone in the Dark keeps, every time I care about Alone in the Dark, like it just keeps getting pushed back. So like, I'll look out for that in 2028.
Rebirth's in less than a month, too.
I'm taking it easy until Rebirth darkens my door.
Yeah, that's it. And I started my PlayStation Encyclopedia, but more on that in 2 years' time.
Okay.
When it's done.
On the 150th episode of this podcast. We're coming up for a year of this podcast very soon, if you can believe it.
Feels like four.
Yeah, I know. And the lawsuit literally can't get any bigger. So on that, let us go home. Leave us a review on Apple or Spotify or whatever you want. And if you send me a screenshot, there's a chance you'll get a game code. I'm running lower. I've given away most of them, but I always get sent shite. So send that to @JordanMidler on Twitter. It's not shite qualitatively. It's shite quantitatively. And a Scottish person, you'll understand that. Questions, comments, and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. Oh, someone sent in an email about someone trying to trade in games to game, but they were covered in human shite, which I forgot to pull, but that's a teaser for next week. We'll read that next week because, I mean,
they'll all be back now to hear that one.
Check out Gaming Gambit Clothing, VGC at checkout for, I can't remember how much percent off. 100% off. You just get it free if you put the code VGC. That's not true. Don't sue me. You can follow me on Twitter @JordanMidler. You can follow Chris @Scully1888. You can follow Jade @KonaYMA6 because she is a big pop punk nerd. We'd like to thank Grant Kirkhope. I have lost the ability to speak. We'd like to thank the great Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme song. One of these days we'll actually pay him for it. Say goodbye, Jade.
See you later, everyone.
Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
and we'll see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.